Dateline Washington. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, the economy. We'll be speaking with Matthew Miller, senior editor at Forbes magazine, about some of the most important economic headlines. What should be included in a massive economic stimulus plan working its way through Congress? Where should the remaining $350 billion from the troubled asset relief program go? And we'll also ask Matt about the story involving Merrill Lynch CEO John Thain and his ridiculous mismanagement of funds to redecorate his office at a time when his company was on the verge of implosion. Also in this edition, New York State finally has its new senator. Democratic Congresswoman Kirsten Gillibrand is the choice of Governor David Patterson. What does she bring to the job? And why did Caroline Kennedy withdraw her name at the last moment? We'll ask David Drucker of Roll Call. Plus, the Obama abortion agenda. As previewed on this program earlier in the week, the president goes ahead and reverses the Mexico City policy, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. Doug Johnson of the National Right to Life Committee is here to tell us what other policies our new president has in mind. All that plus the end of the week's top news and some end of the week fun with the Capitol Steps follows our discussion with Matt Miller of Forbes, and that begins right now. My first guest in this edition is Matthew Miller, senior editor at Forbes magazine. We've asked him to weigh in on the latest Wall Street scandal as Merrill Lynch, which was riding so low early in 2008 that it was eventually bought out by Bank of America, has been found out that its CEO was lavishly spending money on its office and issuing huge bonuses just before the takeover was made official. We also want to get Matt's thoughts on the latest debate over what should be included in an economic stimulus package and the second half of the Wall Street bailout funds. And Matt, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we heard a number of months ago about how AIG had been lavish in its spending, and even with some of the money it had gotten as a result of the TARP money. What was John Thain thinking, and what's the image now of his company on Wall Street?
You know, for John Thain personally, I mean, I don't know what's wrong with his brain. It's almost criminal from a public relations standpoint what he was doing right before Bank of America bought Merrill Lynch. Bank of America, if you'll remember, that was on September 15th when that deal happened. It was trading around $17 a share, and they bought it in the mid-20s. And yet, he knew that all the toxic stuff, that what apparently didn't show up in the due diligence of the deal, was there, and yet he was spending $1 million refurbishing his office. Any CEO who's going through this, and as we were going through the crash, should have known that this was just unacceptable behavior. I am, and this is coming from someone who thinks that CEOs, if they bring billions of dollars to shareholders, should be getting million-dollar bonuses. If John Thain made shareholders $4 billion by selling Merrill Lynch at a premium, he should get a small piece of that. Maybe he gets $4 or $10 million bonus. But this is beyond that, because this is just a public relations nightmare. And it smacks of all the problems that Main Street has with Wall Street.
What is the scope of the public relations fallout, do you think? Is it just more public distrust, another here-we-go-again type of story, or could it have some lingering impact?
It has. I mean, the only lingering impact it might have is that people might not put their new clients might not put their money with Merrill Lynch. But you know, frankly, it just makes him look horrible. And you know, but if there's one thing we've seen, it's that people who make it to the upper echelons of business and go through this stuff usually have another job lined up that pays them a seven-figure salary very soon. And John Thain's probably rich enough he doesn't have to work another day in his life, so it's really a personal thing. And then, of course, you know, Bank of America is really the company, and Ken Lewis, who runs it, is the one who's going to have to eat it a little bit for how bad, you know, they've really overpaid for Merrill Lynch, and they're going to have to eat that for a long time.
And so they not only have to deal with the fact that they overpaid, but the public relations nightmare that they're going to have to endure here, at least for a little while. What is the sense on Wall Street right now? Obviously, there was a huge panic 3 to 4 months ago. Not sure if some of the most storied names in financial institutions would survive. Some of them didn't, particularly Lehman Brothers. Is there a sense now that at least the waters have stabilized to some extent, or is there still a lot of uncertainty out there?
There's a tremendous amount of uncertainty when you call multimillionaires and billionaires these days, what they're saying is they're basically in a holding pattern, and they're in a holding pattern for two reasons. One, they don't think the market has totally bottomed out, and that's the market, not just Dow Jones and S&P, but everything. So anybody who actually has cash on the sidelines is unwilling to put it into something, be it a building or real estate or expansion of their own business, because they just don't, they're very uncertain as to what the future holds. And so I think everyone, we're going to kind of sit in the $7,000 to $8,000 range from the Dow for a while as people just kind of deal with this and as the recession really kind of works itself through the system. But, you know, these are trying times, and all of the, you know, verbiage that we hear about how bad the economy is, it's all very true. Banks still aren't lending. People still aren't spending. And it's going to take some time for that to trickle through the economy.
You mentioned, Matt, that the biggest investors are waiting for things to bottom out. Does the timeline on that change, even in a small way, as a result of the story that we started with here and the just the gross mismanagement of funds by folks like John Thain?
I think it does a little bit, but not, you know, these things are all they're all interconnected, but you know, the uncertainty really isn't just one or the other. It's really, especially the titans of finance, who really kind of start when they start investing. It will produce economic growth to some extent, and that will mean jobs, and people will spend more. And you hear that classic line of trickle down. I really think that will happen, but I think it's more the fact that they can't get banks to lend them any kind of money, because most people will not, if they have $100 in the bank and that's what it costs me to buy a building, they're not going to spend their full $100. What they want to do is spend $30 on the building and borrow the other 70%. That's how business is done. And if banks aren't lending, you're not going to be able to do deals, or you're not going to want to do deals with all of the cash that you have on the sidelines. And as a result, that's really where we have to kind of focus, at least the beginning, not just, you know, bank lending to consumers, but bank lending to businesses as well.
We're talking with Matthew Miller, senior editor at Forbes. And Matt, we know that the rest of the TARP money, the $350 billion, will be coming at some point. We haven't heard a lot of details about where it might go or where it ought to go. Based on your assessment, what do you think is the best location for this money?
You know, I wish they could figure it out, because we sit here every day in the office trying to figure out what to say on this. And there is no one or two answer solution. First and foremost, they have to be able to account for the rest of the TARP money, because the first $350 they spent, you can't really tell where it's gone. It went to banks and it went to other things, but it's basically sitting on bank balance sheets. But the GAO came out with a great report that said, you know, there isn't an actual, nobody ever actually wrote this all down. They just tried to get it out there, and the banks didn't do anything with it. I think somehow you have to use the money where you put a gun to the heads of bank heads and say, you must get this capital into the system, and you may not sit on it. And something has to happen with that, because that is the crux of it. There's a lot of talk right now of Americans are going to get more thrifty. That's great, because most of us are broke anyway. But the big problem is that as Americans get more thrifty, we live in a consumption-based economy. If they're more thrifty, they're not going to spend. And so the only way to actually really kind of grow the economy again is to kind of push them towards spending more, and you need to be able to lend people to do that. So I think that's really where the TARP money should be focused.
Well, let's back up a step. Matt, some folks in Congress, just as they did on the original bailout plan, when it came to reauthorizing the second half of this, voted against it. Was this second half needed, or do you think it would have been possible for the financial institutions to survive on the first half?
I don't think they could have survived on the first half. It's everything. If we've learned anything, it's that this just keeps getting worse, and it's worse than we ever predicted in September, October, November, or December, and pretty much it's worse in January too. And it will probably be, we're going to just keep finding these toxic assets and these bad mortgages, but more than that, just there's just losses that have been covered up, and we're going to keep going through that for a while. So the money needs to be spent. You know, but hopefully the president will be able to keep his word on, we're going to do this with efficiency and accountability, and we're not just going to spend for spending's sake. And so if they're able to do that and do it wisely, I think not only the $350 billion that we have in TARP, but also the $500 billion that they're talking as part of this $825 million stimulus package, you know, really could invigorate the economy. But, you know, these things, everybody needs to remember that all these things take time, and this recession will go through the full year, no matter how much we try to stimulate the economy.
We're talking again with Matthew Miller of Forbes Magazine in our last couple of minutes here. Matt, you led perfectly right into the final topic here, and that's the fact that the Obama administration, congressional Democrats, want to get the stimulus package passed probably sometime around the middle of February. We're hearing more and more details about what ought to be in here and what ought to be left out. Republicans saying there's a lot of money in here, but not necessarily a lot that's going to stimulate job growth. Democrats say it needs to be a multifaceted approach. From what we know so far, how optimistic are you about it, and what do you think ought to be some of the key principles in this type of legislation?
What I like about it is not the short-term aspects, but the long-term aspects. The infrastructure spending is absolutely necessary, but the Republicans are right to criticize. This does not create jobs probably until late 2009 or 2010. It does not create jobs in February, March, or April. Just doesn't happen. Can't get these things done fast enough. So I do like the long-term approach to that, to energy efficiency, everything else that's in the bill. I like that there is tax relief in it, because we sometimes, you know, liberals and conservatives just bat around whether tax is a Republican thing or a Democrat thing. They really need to provide tax relief to everyone. And I give them a lot of credit for basically inferring that they're not going to repeal the Bush tax cuts just yet. They'll probably let them expire. And so I think all of that is good things. I think what hasn't been really driven home yet is that we live in this instantaneous society where we know this is the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, but we want it to be fixed next quarter. And while the president has certainly called for patience and for sacrifice, I think people need to realize that this is going to be the Dow isn't going to go back to 14,000 by June, and we're going to have to work ourselves through this, and it's going to take not only some sacrifice and some thrift, but some time.
Matthew, unfortunately, our time is up. Always great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Matthew Miller, senior editor at Forbes Magazine. This is Dateline Washington.